I'm Chris Busby. I was trained as a chemical physicist, and I worked for a drug company, Wellcome, for some years. And since about 1990, I've been engaged in researching and developing new ideas about the health effects of internal radiation. I formed the European Committee on Radiation Risk with the support of the Green Party in 1998. And since then, I've been on two British government committees looking at the health effects of internal radiation. And I've now published more than 50 papers in the scientific peer-reviewed literature on the effects of radiation. And I'm particularly interested in uranium, because I think uranium is a substance which has been wildly underestimated in terms of its effects, which emerged originally in depleted uranium weapons use in the Gulf Wars.
Okay, so I mean, my own experience, if I can call it that, of nuclear material is standing on Temple Mead Station as one of these trains with nuclear flasks was heading through. And I was actually waiting for another train, but I mean, it may have been my imagination. I don't think it was, but I could feel the radiation coming off of these things. I think the idea is that at Hinkley Power Station, these uranium fuel rods, they get extremely radioactive in the reactor, and then they have to put them in a cooling pond to cool down for a year or so, then stick them on a train and send them to Sellafield. But I actually could feel it almost in my, you know, in my bones. I could feel this kind of nasty sensation coming off of this train. So I backed off and went round the corner on Temple Mead Station to get away from it. So the question now, anyway, is that what is going on with the nuclear program in the UK, Chris? Because we are starting to see a kind of new green movement that is embracing nuclear power because of its effects less apparently on the climate.
Yes, well, of course, this is a decision people have to make on the basis of their ideas about whether nuclear is carbon dioxide free and whether it should be used in order to have a low carbon footprint with regard to climate change. And so a lot of the greenies have now decided that climate change is a much bigger threat than the radiation that's likely to come from the nuclear industry. And of course, they're entitled to do that. But they should do it on the basis of the real truth about the health effects of releases from these nuclear sites, rather than some, you know, pie in the sky nonsense that's peddled by the nuclear industry and also then parroted by people like George Monbiot, you know, who actually knows nothing at all about radiation or radiation biology or radiation risk or anything. I mean, there's another guy, Mark something or another, who embraces nuclear on the basis of totally crazy ideas about the risks from it. Now, I'll say a few things about the risks from it, because that's something that I've studied quite a lot and published quite a lot about. And those risks were originally studied by the Atomic Bomb Casualty Committee, who followed the people who were exposed at Hiroshima and Nagasaki for their lifespan. It's called the Lifespan Study. So anyway, the point is that the risk model, what emerges from this is that the risk model that they obtained from doing that big study is completely wrong. It's just totally and completely wrong by orders of magnitude, by factors of between 1,000 and 10,000, which is why when you go and study people living near nuclear sites like Hinkley and Bradwell, which I have studied, you know, and published in the peer review literature, you find excess risk of cancer, particularly female breast cancer. Also, I looked at Trasvenneth nuclear power station in Wales. Again, we had a fivefold excess of breast cancer in women. But you find that there are excess risks of childhood leukemia in just about every single nuclear site that anybody has studied. But they continue to deny causation on the basis of this Hiroshima study.
Okay, so what would you say, you know, how do you, would you counter those arguments? What evidence have you got that this study is so wrong?
Well, the Hiroshima study was based. It started in 1952. I mean, it was an epidemiological study of about 80,000 people who were exposed at the time of the bomb, and they were originally to be compared with a control group, people who weren't in the city at the time of the bomb, in order to see how many cancers there were. And then to see how many cancers there were on the basis of what dose they got from the immediate explosion. And so this study carried on. It was funded by the Americans. The first thing you could say about it, which is what Alice Stewart said, is that it was a survivor population. So by 1952, when they assembled all these people, an awful lot of people who'd been exposed to the radiation had died. But anyway, putting that to one side, you can then look at these people and see how many cancers they got according to how far they were from the explosion. Now, the explosion produces gamma rays and neutrons, external radiation, and that's absorbed by the people's bodies that live there. And if they're really close to it, when it went off, they were just incinerated. Then if they're about, 500 meters, a kilometer away, some of them survived and then went on to get cancer. But after 2 kilometers, nobody got any dose at all, because that's when the radiation runs out of steam. So what the study did is it looked at the dose according to their distance from when the bomb went off, and it compared that to the number of cancers they got. But by 1973, suddenly they discovered that the people who were not in the city, the control group, started to show up with lots of cancers, and they said, well, this is impossible. They weren't even exposed to the radiation. So they kicked out the control group. They said, this must be a false control group. So they took it out altogether. And after that, they just compared high dose to medium dose to low dose, and they drew a straight line through the whole thing, and that gave them the number of cancers you get per unit dose. But there was a huge problem, and the problem was that bomb, when it exploded, sucked an awful lot of water vapor up into the air, and then the bomb constituents themselves, the uranium that the bomb was made of, and 95% of it hadn't fissioned, it was only 5% that fissioned, turned into particles, and those particles fell on the ground as black rain. And this black rain fell for at least 7 or 8 kilometers away from the bomb, from the detonation. So in around about 2000, 2005, that sort of time, studies began to show that people who were nowhere near the bomb were getting cancer. Okay, the control group people had got high levels of cancer. They weren't even in the city. They just came in afterwards. So obviously those people were exposed to something that were giving them cancer, and this something was the black rain. Well, secret documents that I saw when I was doing the court case, and I'm not allowed to talk about it apart from saying that, the fact that those documents exist are there in the transcripts of the court case, which are public data. They can be taken forward to show that the concentration of uranium inside the bomb in the black rain was extremely high, that the doses from the black rain were extremely high. And the reason I can say this is that in 2014, an American document from Rocky Flats, where they processed this uranium into the bomb material, was released for public consumption in 2014. It was a 1976 document. And when you look at it, you can see that the amounts of a missing uranium isotope called uranium-234 were absolutely enormous. They were absolutely enormous. So what happened is that the study, the Hiroshima study, is made false, made completely false, by the fact that the cancers were not caused by the external radiation. They were caused by the exposure to internal uranium particles from the black rain, which were in the water supply and in the dust when people were rebuilding the city from 1945 to 1950. There was huge amounts of dust because they were pulling all the ruins down and rebuilding it and so on. And everyone is inhaling the dust. Or drinking the water contaminated with this U-234. So this is big news, because what this means is that the risk model that they obtained from this Hiroshima study is completely wrong. Now, that's the same risk model that's used to argue that cancers near Hinkley Point and cancers near Bradwell — I found high levels of breast cancer near Bradwell also, and that's been published in the literature — those cancers are real, and they're caused by the radiation. They're caused by the uranium released from the stacks and other isotopes released from the stacks of the nuclear power stations into the local environment.
Sure, nuclear fuels, Chris, would say that actually they don't release any uranium from the stacks, that it's all filtered out.
Yes, well, they do say that, but actually there are papers that show that just isn't true. And in fact, there was the data that they brought out for when EDF were building were applying for the license to build Hinkley Point. There was an environmental impact assessment made in which the concentrations of uranium were actually measured, in the soil around the site, you know, as a sort of background to what was going to happen when they bring in the new reactor. And we analyzed, I did with Cecily Collingridge and I, she's dead now, but we analyzed that data and we found that there was a huge number of tons of extra uranium in the soil around Hinkley, around the site that they were, you know, around the Hinkley Point site. And that uranium was in the upper soil, so it wasn't in the lower soils, because they actually did cores. So we could show that the upper soil contained a lot more uranium than the lower soil. And this uranium had been coming from the stacks, and also from being pumped out into the sea where it gets washed back. So we also had a trend with distance from the sea. So all that uranium is in the mud. And not only that, but we actually took samples and measured the uranium. And there is uranium also in the spectra that we obtain by Freedom of Information Act requests to the operators of Hinkley Point. I think maybe even to EDF, I can't remember. I know Environment Agency, that was it. So we got the data and we could show that there was excess uranium in the mud. Now that mud is being dredged now and taken over to the Welsh side and just dumped off Cardiff, where you've got millions of people living just near all that stuff.
Well, yeah, but you see, British Nuclear Fuels, the operators of these plants, will say there is no uranium in the local environment. They'll say, actually, that uranium, Chris, stays in the reactor itself and it just heats water up. It doesn't go anywhere. It certainly doesn't go into the atmosphere.
Well, that just isn't true. I mean, if you look at the United Nations Scientific Committee on the Effects of Atomic Radiation, the 2000 edition is the last time that they released data on the releases, their tables from 1990 to 1999. So that's 9 or 10 years of data from every nuclear site in the world. And one of the tables, you know, one of the rows in those tables has the Hinkley reactors, Hinkley A, Hinkley B. There they are, you know. I mean, anybody can see that.
How does the uranium get through a great big steel pressure vessel? I mean, it can't just go through metal, can it?
No, of course not. But the thing is that they vent this stuff through stacks. They vent the cooling water through stacks, and the cooling water gets contaminated by leakages and broken up fuel rods and all sorts of crap. You know, I mean, it just is the case. You can see in the tables that they say particulate releases, and these particulate releases are releases of particles of uranium from the fuel rods, and they go out, they are released every year into the air. I mean, there they are in the tables. It's quite a lot of it, I can tell you. I mean, I can send you the tables and you can see them. There they are. So, I mean, they could say, oh, it can't come out of here because it's impossible. But whether it's impossible or not, it does.
Okay, so the latest news we've got from Hinkley is that there has been a tower that has collapsed at Hinkley, which released a dust cloud in the whole area. A spokesperson for EDF, which is building the site, said the silos suffered structural damage, and this was back on the 10th of June. Doesn't sound as if the people constructing it are really doing a very good job if they've allowed a large silo to collapse on site.
Well, there's another thing that, yes, I agree with you. And there's another thing, they're the turbines. I mean, these things have oil seals. You know, in order to drive the electricity through the turbines, you've got to have a shaft which runs through metal. And on one side of it, you get all the steam and all the stuff. And on the other side, you get, you know, you get the air. And the oil for those things is incinerated regularly. They have incinerators, they just burn it. So there are lots of ways in which this stuff can get out. I mean, there's the cooling ponds as well, you know. So these things get thrown into the cooling ponds, that you know, it like to cool off, you know. And then of course they go off to Sellafield to be whatever they do there, you know, recycled or turned into plutonium or whatever, you know, reprocessed. That was it. And it gets out of Sellafield, I can tell you, because we've measured it. I mean, I've measured. I tell you one thing that I did recently, which hasn't got out, is that I got an air filter from somebody living in just within 5-6 kilometers of, I think maybe Covington, somewhere like that, from a vehicle. I asked them. I've been asking for vehicle air filters in order to see particles inside them, if there are any, because there's a method of looking at particles called CR39. It's a bit like a photographic method. So you put it next to the air filter membrane, and you leave it for a long time, and then you get these little tracks that you can see when you develop it with potassium hydroxide, and you can look at it through a microscope. So there was this filter that was sent to me by this person who lived near Hinkley Point, and there it is. There's a really seriously dangerous uranium particle in the car air filter. So if it can get into an engine air filter, it can certainly get into your lung.
It certainly can, yes. Yeah. So are you encouraging people who live around Hinkley and other nuclear power stations to send you their car air filters when they get replaced at the garage?
I haven't done more than that one. I mean, it's quite a tedious business doing this. So you have to develop it, because the uranium is quite a weak alpha emitter. You have to develop it for about 30 days. And I mean, I was mostly interested in these particles near Sellafield. So I've got a lot of car air filters from up Barrow in Furness, up to West, Whitehaven, and also soil samples, and I've been looking at those to look at the particles in those. In fact, that may have been partly why the police raided this place, you know, because they were very interested in all the radiation experiments that were going on. In fact, they destroyed one of the radiation experiments. I had an air filter with one of these CR39 things on it, and they picked it up, and basically that just destroyed the link between the two, you know, so I was a bit irritated about that.
Okay, what would you say then to environmentally minded Green Party types that actually are now embracing nuclear, Chris?
I'll say this, that as a result of nuclear power station releases and nuclear tests in the atmosphere, more than 60 million people have died of cancer between 1952 and 1990, and I haven't updated it after that. The cancer effects from the exposure to internal radiation are absolutely terrifying, and they've caused increases in infertility, and they've basically destroyed the biological genome, not just of human beings, but of animals and plants and the whole works. And there's just such a lot of evidence that this is the case that's completely ignored. This evidence is in the peer review literature. It's possible to do experiments that show it, but the trouble is with these people, they're not scientists like Monbiot. They're not remotely scientists, and they just swallow the guff that's handed out by the nuclear industry, and they say, well, this is science. I mean, the problem is, it's about who you believe, you know. It's like Pontius Pilate saying, what is truth?
It's interesting that George Monbiot in The Guardian came out as pro-nuclear, as an environmentalist, around about the time of the Fukushima disaster. Is that the case?
Yes, that's right. I mean, I was contacted by Monbiot not long before that, about a year before that, when I was pally with Michael Meacher. And Monbiot phoned me up when I was in the south of France, and he asked me to send him an outline of how radiation causes, because at that time he was anti-nuclear, and because he said he was going to write an article in the Guardian about radiation. This was before he came out in favor, before Fukushima. But in the end, he didn't use any of the stuff that I sent him. And at that time, I thought, well, hang on, what's going on here? And then what happened was Fukushima. Then I got a very high profile, because I was the first person to go out on the television. As luck would have it, I was passing through London from France at the time, and they hauled me into the studio, the BBC. You can still see that one on YouTube. And I said, look, and they were saying, oh, this is not a big deal, you know, it's not as bad as Three Mile Island, and you know, no releases and blah, blah. And I said, look, this is extremely serious, and it's worse than Chernobyl. And so then what happened was that I was invited out to Japan by some Japanese lawyers to give evidence in a court case about taking the children away from the contaminated zone. And I got quite a big sort of, you know, big media presence in Japan. I was on all the TV shows and all the rest of it. And I was generally, you know, feted as a great sort of scientist and so forth. And so, of course, somebody had to bring me down, and that somebody was Monbiot. So at that point, Monbiot, who I've always believed is a dodgy character and who works for the bad guys, he was obviously triggered at that point. You know, they thought, well, we've got to do something here, because it looked like Fukushima was going to be the end of the nuclear industry. So they had to sort of get the greenies on board. They had to somehow get the greenies on board. So they played the card of the global warming card with Monbiot, because Monbiot had a big following, because somehow or another he'd managed to get himself into the Guardian as like their main correspondent on the environment. So he had a lot of weight behind him, and so he wrote all that nasty stuff about me, and that completely destroyed my my funding base with the Roundtree Foundation and so on. You know, so after that, none of the greeny people, greeny foundations, have given me a penny. But in fact, it doesn't really matter. And I think Monbiot shot himself in the foot there, because an awful lot of people were quite angry about what he did. And in the end, he wasn't able to justify it. I mean, he was asked to appear at Oxford Town Hall in a debate with me about the issue, and he refused to come. So he chickened out.
What about Hinckley then? I mean, there has been some reining back of nuclear. Obviously, the Germans have done it.
Well, my own feeling is that it's not going to happen. I mean, and to come back to the political side of it, I mean, if we do live in a democracy, which actually, you know, we can argue about, then it is a democratic decision. So if people all vote for nuclear, you know, just like they all voted for Brexit, then we can say that that's the democratic decision. But the point about democracy, it has to work, you know, for it to work properly, it has to work on the basis of real data, real information. And it's not. I mean, there's just a pack of lies being disseminated about the health effects of radiation. And so that's completely wrong. But I personally think that the money will get them. I mean, at the moment, I think they're talking about building all these power stations just in order to raise money, frankly. I don't think they'll ever build any of them.
What about the alternative types of energy? Like, for example, right next to Hinckley, there is the Bristol Channel, which has one of the highest tidal reaches in the world. The distance between the high and low tides. Do you think there's any possibility that what we'll see instead built there is some sort of tidal energy system?
Well, it could be done. Absolutely could be done. Of course, the problem is if the sea level rises, then you know, it's hard to see how they could do it. And of course, everybody will come out and say, oh, we can't have this because it will affect the wildlife and this and that. But I mean, I think it's a good idea myself. I mean, the real answer, I'm always getting asked this question, like what to do, is we just cannot continue to use the level of energy that we're using, because most of that energy is used to make things which are unnecessary and wasteful. It's an economic problem, really. I mean, with all the scientific developments there are, we can do most of the things we need to do really quite cheaply. You know, I mean, if you had proper transport systems like we do in Latvia, you know, you don't need a car in Latvia because, you know, you've got fantastic transport systems. You've got buses that go everywhere for next to nothing. And you could do that in England, but they don't. Because in England, they're interested in selling lots of cars and making money for the people who make the cars and so forth. And most of the things that you can buy in the shops are unnecessary.
The pandemic, I wonder, because we spoke to you right at the very start, actually, when it all started kicking off over in China, and saying things like, oh, well, you don't think masks may be all that useful. But you came up with all sorts of interesting stuff, saying, for example, that the link to 5G was likely to be very spurious and possibly complete nonsense, which it does seem to have been the case. Yeah. How do you think it's all transpired? And I wonder, are you going around with your mask in the shops?
Certainly am. I mean, I tell you what, I've just come from Latvia to pick up my stepdaughter, I suppose, to take her back to Latvia. And I'm treating this country like it's Mars, you know. So I go along with gloves on and a hat and a mask and the whole works, you know. I mean, because I said right at the beginning that this was very serious, you know. And people say, oh no, it's just a load of scam, and it's just the people are trying to make out it so that they can control us and this and that. This is a serious, serious, serious disease, and it's going rumbling. It's rumbling along now. It hasn't stopped. I thought it might go away eventually, but it hasn't. It's rumbling along at a low level, and I think it might pick up towards the winter again. So I think people have to be very worried about this and to take all the precautions that the government has belatedly decided to put in place. Otherwise, you know, there's going to be a lot more dead people. And I'm getting out. I'm only here to pick up Layla, and then I'm getting out, and then I'm going to go and live in the middle of nowhere again and hide.
Well, look, back to Hinckley finally. What about the? I mean, is this all the activity that we're seeing near Bridgewater really going to just simply grind to a halt? We're going to be left with these half-built stations. That's what you're implying.
Yes, yes, yes. I think that's exactly what will happen. What will happen is that the bad guys, who are running the show here, are going to get the maximum amount of money out of it that they can, and then go bankrupt. I mean, that's the way of the world now. What you do is you have some sort of building project. You see Boris Johnson is saying, oh, we're going to build, you know, we're going to build our way out of this desperate recession that's likely to come at us because we're spending so much money because nobody's doing anything because of the coronavirus. So we're going to build. What that means, that doesn't mean build. What that means is we're going to borrow money to build, okay? And so that's what people do. That's the name of the game. So you set up some bogus company like you know, Green Earth Cooperative. And then you get the planning people to, and this is already happening. He's opened up the planning all over the place. So you go to the planning people and you say, oh, we're going to build an enormous housing estate for all the poor people in the middle of that field over there. So you buy the field off the farmer for tuppence. And then you go to the banks and you say that this development is going to be worth 29 billion or million. And so the banks give you half of that. And then you put a few foundations in and then you go bankrupt and run off with the money. That's the way of the world nowadays. That's how money is made.
Dr. Chris Busby, thanks very much for joining us.
You're welcome.